continuing with meatloaf, other necessary items, such as butter, eggs, ham, and onions, were smuggled in by this same method. Nothing of this sort arrived with the deportees. Since the gold was procured through a collective effort, the distribution of the merchandise received in exchange was made on this same basis. Thus, both the crematorium personnel and the SS non-coms received an ample supply of food, liquor, and cigarettes. My interjection, I guess Power could make a case that the work standard is a wealth generator. There's an economic justification here. It's efficient. Production costs driven down to the barest minimum. Continuing. Everyone shut his eyes to this traffic, for it was to everyone's advantage that it continue. Taken individually, any SS guard in the crematorium could be bought. They distrusted only themselves, knowing that the Sonderkommando had never betrayed anyone and never would. That was why the food, liquor, and cigarettes were turned over to one SS guard by one confidence man from the commando. And my interjection, taken individually, quote-unquote, i.e. dissociated from the state. Dissociated from the state, truth can begin to exert some influence. Continuing with meatloaf. By this same underground route, the official organ of the Third Reich, the Völkische Beobachter, was brought every day to the crematorium by a different railroad worker. A monthly subscription cost one 140-gram gold cylinder. Anyone who risked his neck 30 times a month bringing his newspaper to a Katzet prisoner deserved the sum he received. Since my arrival in the crematorium, I'd been the first one to receive this smuggled copy. I read it in a safe hiding place, then related the day's events to one of the prisoner clerks, who in turn passed on the news to his companions. Within a few minutes, everyone had heard the latest news. The Sonderkommando was an elite group. Its advantages and privileges have already been noted. In contrast to the prisoners in the camp proper, who writhed in lice-filled boxes, who, mad with hunger, battled furiously for a scrap of bread or a piece of potato, its lot was indeed good. Fully aware of this unbalanced situation, the Sonderkommando distributed food and clothing to their less fortunate comrades whenever they could. For the past several days, a woman's commando of about 500 road workers had been busy not far from the crematorium gate. They were guarded by two SS and four police dogs. Their job consisted of carrying rocks to be used in the construction of a road. Several men from the Sonderkommando, with the permission of their own guards, approached the two SS guarding the women and slipped them each a pack of cigarettes. With that, the deal was concluded. Then three or four women, loaded with stones, walked over to our gate, as if their work had brought them there, and immediately gathered up all the clothing that had been prepared for them. They also got some bread, bacon, and cigarettes. In turn, they were replaced by others in the commando, till each had received her share. There was never any favoritism shown by the Sonderkommando, for none of us knew any of the women personally. Overjoyed with their presence, they returned to their work. The next day, a different group replaced them, and the same scene was reenacted. The crematorium's enormous storeroom contained great quantities of clothes and shoes awaiting shipment, and I would estimate that several thousand women prisoners were aided in this manner by the Sonderkommando. I also tried to do my bit, loading my pockets with vitamin pills, sulfa tablets, bottles of iodine, bandages, and anything else I thought might be useful. I handed them out as the women passed. When my stock was depleted, I returned to my room and refilled my pockets. For those who received them, these medicines often meant the difference between life and death, at least for a little while. And I guess we'll leave it there and continue next week with Miklos Neasley's Auschwitz, A Doctor's Eyewitness Account. Until then, peace.